And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another edition of Nerdy Notions with Sasha Kaplan.
Hello, I'm Sasha Kaplan. And today we are diving into a property that I have a lot of love for. Partially because, as I said last week, Peter was my first superhero. And so, you know, I started with the 90s Spider-Man. And that was my introduction to Spider-Man as a character. And I loved that that series so much. Just like I still love the animated X-Men film, cartoon. I said animated X-Men films. and so this is a property that I, as a movie, there's been a lot of, I think we need to like give some backstory. We have the Sam Raimi trilogy, which the first and second Spider-Man especially is considered to be kind of the best. And the original, the Sam Raimi trilogy kind of told the classic story of Spider-Man, but then they kind of flipped it up. Mary Jane was very flat. And yeah.
And probably eventually we'll actually do episodes on those three.
Probably one
somewhere
day.
Down the road. I mean, we were already talking about other stuff post-MCU, so.
Exactly. And then you have the Andrew Garfield movies, which try to give us kind of like a more hipstery Peter Parker, who's a little bit more techie, and, well, everybody pretty much agrees that the Amazing Spider-Man 2 is a dumpster fire. And so after the failure that is Amazing Spider-Man 2, Marvel had approached Sony previously. It was like, hey, we want Spider-Man in the MCU. Can we have these, please?
Let's work out a deal.
Said, yeah, let's go have these. And Sony said, piss off. We don't want to deal with you. And an Amazing Spider-Man 2 happened. And then Sony kind of comes crawling back like, yeah, okay, we can talk now. And so you have the thing that kind of led to the differences between Marvel and Sony that we saw play out this past year.
Yeah.
It's been about a year. There's still so much misinformation that people don't understand about this, that whole thing. But we'll probably talk about that more, I think, when we get to Far From Home. So with that, let's talk about our boy Petey. We talked a little bit about our boy Petey in the Civil War review, where we talked about the introduction of Tony bringing Petey into this role, Petey getting a suit.
What is Peter Parker your homeboy or something? You just
Petey is my homeboy. He was my first superhero. I have a deep-seated love for Peter Parker. So one of the things that should be noted is that whereas the original, the Sam Raimi films focused on the 1962 Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man obviously focused on the comic of the same name. This Spider-Man version is, I would argue, relatively loosely, yet somewhat accurately based on Ultimate Spider-Man, written by Brian Michael Bendis, which came out under Marvel's Ultimate Universe, which a lot of elements of that Ultimate Universe, for better or worse, have made it into the MCU. So Spider-Man is really no different. So we meet Petey when he's a lot younger than we've ever met him before. Petey is a sophomore. And we know he has a very young and attractive aunt, which is really adorable, played by one of my favorite actresses, Marissa Tomei, who is gorgeous and amazing. And every time I hear her voice, I keep thinking about that biological clock. That's on my Cousin Vinny reference for you heathens that have not seen that fantastical film. So let's start this movie. This movie has a couple of mistakes in it.
We were text messaging each other back and forth while watching the film to refresh my memory.
So a couple things to note. The first mistake is actually right in the beginning of the film is, well, I think
right off the bat, you see a salvage of events immediately after the first Avengers film, which was 2012. So that is the very first thing that really takes place. And you see Toomes and his crew, you know, working on the alien stuff, on the Chitauri. To which then you obviously see like government agents come in and go, oh, we're now taking
These are not just government agents. It should be noted that this is Damage Control, which is a Marvel Universe department within the federal government. Yes, I'm a comic book nerd. Shut up. That deals with the fallouts of major Avenger scale events. Because somebody has to clean up that mess.
Yeah, and Tony Stark's putting up the bill.
Tony Stark and the government. Tombs, who is played by Michael Keaton, is obviously annoyed because he was contracted for this. He bought new rigs, he hired a new crew, and the guys are just like, yeah, sorry, that's not my problem.
You're kind of SOL. Now, here's the interesting thing.
And they, hold on, we're getting there. So they end up, they're like, okay, please turn over all the tech. And they turn over the tech-ish, and they keep a lot of it.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where it ends. I think he almost punches the agent guy, but that's not important.
Well, they punch the agent guy because he said a sly remark. But the thing is, though, is that they eventually get to their warehouse. And their techie guy, the guy who makes like all the tech gear for them, he goes, hey, we have a whole truckload right here. Do we want to give it up? And then Tombs is like, nah, let's keep it. This is where the first mistake now comes into play, because it says eight years later. And it takes you to the, like, literally moments after Civil War.
Which was not
eight years later. It was 5 years later. And this is the thing that you and I were talking.
Because
2017.
Spider-Man comes out in 2017, yeah.
Yes. So this is 5 years later, not 8 years later, and this is something that is referenced again at least two more times later in the film.
I think it's just once later. But either way, this is Russos actually came out and said that, like, this was a mistake because the timing doesn't make sense. The 8 years later, I could see being from the, like, the time Peter meets Iron Man when he's really little, because we know that that was confirmed. That the little kid that wears the Iron Man helmet is actually Peter Parker, and I have issues with that for several reasons that we will get to as we get through this. So 8 years later is the first mistake. So in this 8 years later,
5 years.
It's like 4.5 realistically, but... So, point being that 4.5-ish, maximum 5 years later, we actually start, the Marvel theme starts playing, except it's not the Marvel theme. It's an orchestral version of the original Spider-Man theme song. Because Spider-Man, does whatever a spider can, spins a web. Anyway, so we are actually see kind of Petey's home movies. Petey is recording his entire journey to New York, from New York to Germany to help Iron Man for some stupid reason. This is where the second mistake comes in, because at the end of this, Petey's dropped off by Happy in the middle of the night, unlike in the after credit scene from Civil War, which, like, you could argue that that was just meant to tease, it wasn't in canon, but, like, then you should have, anyway. So Peter doesn't have his little spider signal thing. He actually gets to keep the suit. And the nice little black eye he's supposed to have from Cap, from that boy from Brooklyn, isn't there. So that was a little irritating. But there's first watch through, I enjoyed the film. And there's only like one thing that bugged me. Looking back on it, I have a lot more issues with this movie than I initially did. Maybe because, you know, when you're watching it at home, you have more time to process, because you can pause, you can grab a drink of water, you can think about it. I do like Peter's suit. I think it's a good suit. But when Peter is being dropped off at home, he's like, okay, when's the next mission? And Tony's like, oh, yeah, we'll call you. Just don't do anything I wouldn't do, and don't do the things I would do, and blah, blah, blah. And that Happy is his, like, handler. So this goes back to something I said in Civil War. Tony Stark is very irresponsible. Realistically speaking, Natasha had the right idea. There's zero rational reason for him to bring a kid into this very real fight with very real heroes that almost ended up with Rhodey dead. So And arguably Peter, while I understand why he was necessary from the behind the scenes perspective, from the in canon perspective, Tony's being an idiot here. But there's an interesting mention of Civil War that I will point out in a bit. Just remind me. Okay. So we flash forward 2 months later. We find out that very shockingly, Peter Parker is a loser in high school. Like, gosh darn. I never would have guessed. Peter has a friend who is named Ned and is literally Genki from Miles Morales' Spider-Man. So problem one, why? There is zero reason this child needs to be in this film. One, first of all, is because it's borrowing from Miles Morales' story, because this is very much a almost identical character to the one from Ultimate Run of the comics where Peter Parker is dead and Miles Morales becomes Spider-Man. He's not a character I like. Every time he talks, I want him punched.
Which character is this again?
Ned.
Yeah.
He's really annoying. He very rarely contributes anything to the story and actually arguably causes Peter more problems. The only time he's useful is at the end.
Yep.
And again, there's the issue of the fact that they're borrowing Miles Morales' story for Peter when it's not necessary. You could have had substituted Ned with Mary Jane if you were going from the Ultimate verse. Because in the Ultimate comics, Mary Jane is Peter's friend. Peter's a little bit of a loner after, like, especially after Uncle Ben dies, but Mary Jane is there. And, like, to the point where Uncle Ben is like, oh, hey, there's Mary Jane. So they really could have done so, I think they could have done better with that.
I think a big reason may have been is that they wanted to try to get away from the Uncle Ben trope.
You could have easily done that with literally any other character from Peter's, there's a lot of things they could have done differently. They could have had a different Harry Osborn, one that is actually shown to have a long-lasting friendship with Peter. So I think, I understand they wanted to move away from the other films, but you could have introduced Harry Osborn in a way that didn't make us hate him. Where then the later betrayals and exposures reveals about the character would have hurt more, even if you see them coming. They already subverted Flash Thompson from the jock bully to the rich bully. They could have subverted it further and made him a friend. They could have introduced a female friend that does not a love interest, like Betty Brant, like Jessica Jones, like literally anybody else from Peter's gallery of classmates could have done a job. There was no need to borrow in any way, in my opinion, from Miles's character. Miles's story. So Ned gets a Death Star, and Peter is now calling his little escapade the Stark internship, which explains why he's like no longer part of any after school activities.
But yet again, at the same time, that was kind of established with Civil War, because the code that they used with Aunt May to let him go to Germany.
Now it comes more
full circle.
Anyway, thank you. It's revealed that Peter has a crush on Liz Allen. This is actually really interesting because in Spectacular Spider-Man, which is a fantastic Spider-Man series, Peter is shown to also have a crush on Liz Allen, and they kind of like date for a while. Peter is interesting because I love the fact that this is a very smart kid. We've seen elements of this in all Spider-Man films, so I'm glad they didn't try to tweak it too much. Peter can answer math questions when he's barely even awake, and he makes web shooters in science classes while also doing, you know, the normal science experiments, which is really funny. Flash is obviously a jerk, and then there's this loner girl played by Zendaya, and I'll get into that later. Let's see. And there's a couple of moments where they're like creepily staring at Liz, like to the point where like they know her wardrobe. I thought that was really, I guess they were,
The director or somebody revealed that they were going for like a more coming of age John Hughes movie feel. But I'm like, you know, in the 80s, that might have been kind of cute. Like, oh, they're obsessed with her. In a modern context, it comes off a little stalkerish.
Well, that was the point of MJ's comment. Because like, they go, it's like, we should probably stop staring. This is going to get creepy. And then MJ comes and goes, oh, you've already passed that. You know, so.
Like, I don't know. It feels pointless to me. Like, they've already established beforehand that Peter has a crush on Liz. And he could have just been, like, staring at her admiringly without all of these comments about the blouse that she's wearing and how they'd seen it before or if it's new or not. So after school, Peter goes to grab a sandwich, which is kind of cute. And he quits this classic decathlon. That's kind of important. So he goes to the sandwich shop, and the sandwich shop guy makes a semi-inappropriate comment about his aunt, to which Peter responds with a comment about, like, is your daughter single or something? And, or, like, hey, how's your daughter doing? And, like, the sandwich guy's like, oh, now you have to pay twice as much. And I'm like, dude, you started this whole thing. So,
and it pays the $5 and still rolls out unscathed.
So Peter really is the friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. He like stops a burglar. He like also tries
he gives
to
stop directions.
He gives directions. He's, you know, rescues cats from up in a tree, gets somebody's bike back, even though I'm pretty sure that was the guy's bike. Tries to prevent a guy from carjacking his own car. That was a little weird. So Peter is like, this is early Peter. This is post Uncle Ben, because we know it's been like 8 months-ish. Because Peter had been Spider-Man 6 months previously before the events of Civil War. It's been about 6 months. And then plus 2 months, about seven-ish months, 8 months, whatever you want. What are numbers in comics and comic book movies? So then there's the whole thing about the lady who bought him a churro, and this entire time Peter is reporting things to Happy and like, hey, when's the next mission? Can I do anything? And for the most part, Happy just kind of blows him off. And it looks like Happy is also packing up Avengers Tower, which like took him long enough, but I guess better late than never. And yeah, Happy's kind of dismissive of Peter, which is really sad. Peter also tries to tell him about like something about like high-tech weapons. And again, like he gets blown. Oh, so there is, I backtrack a little bit. So at the end of the evening of Peter's escapades, after the lady with the churro, he sees a bunch of guys trying to rob a bank via the ATM. So they have like Avengers masks and there's some cute banter, and they have this really weird high-tech weapon that when it blows up, it like cuts a hole through everything in the vicinity, including the sandwich shop. The sandwich guy and the cat are fine. So Peter tries to tell all of this to Happy, and Happy like blows him off. It's very dismissive, and I really don't understand it.
I kind of do. And it kind of goes back to, in a way, with Iron Man 2. Because if you notice, in Iron Man 2, Happy starts getting kind of pushed to the side because here comes Black Widow. Then you go into Iron Man 3, and he's been kind of relegated to head of security for Stark Industries.
Oh, and now he's on babysitter duty?
And exactly. And he's now like on babysitting duty. So he's been constantly pushed down the ladder. And so in a way you're kind of seeing Happy more devolve than evolve.
Happy needs to stop being a jerk is basically the summary of this movie.
Exactly. But, and that's the thing. Yeah.
So Peter stealthily returns to his room, and he's very careful to like make sure Aunt May doesn't notice. And as he drops down, obviously Ned is there, and he's like, oh my God, you're Spider-Man. And there's that initial freak out and all that jazz. And it's interesting that the media so far is very favorable to Spider-Man. Which is really interesting. Everybody's like, yeah, he's like this nice guy. You know, Peter's just like that friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. So meanwhile, the next day at school, they talk, you know, Ned is asking him all these ridiculous questions, and they're in gym class, and they're watching a PSA that Steve Rogers recorded. I would say it's probably 10-10 post-Avengers 1, because he's wearing the Avengers suit. And he's just recording all of these dorky, like, PSAs, like, my friend, your gym teacher. And, oh, God.
I like that the gym teacher goes, like, well, we're not really friends, but sure, why not?
He says, pretty sure he's a war criminal now, but whatever.
Oh, yeah, that was the one, yeah.
What I love here is that this definitely shows you the difference between how the average public sees Captain America versus how Captain America really is. Because the average person sees the caricature, right? He's almost like Superman, you know? He can do no wrong. He always knows what's right. He's a good old boy who eats his pie and thanks his mama. Like, you know, he's perfect. And he gives those cringy PSAs that are like, oy.
Hilarious.
Don't do drugs, kids. And it's hilarious. Ned has a big problem in this movie, aside from the fact that his existence is a problem. He cannot keep his damn mouth shut. So he ends up telling Liz that, like, oh, yeah, Peter's, like, friends with Spider-Man because Liz is having a party and they're teenagers. And, oi. So Ned talks about how he wants to be the guy in the chair. And it's revealed that Liz has a crush on Spider-Man. And something that's interesting is somebody asked, like, what if he's all deformed under the mask? And it's actually really interesting because that could be construed as a Deadpool reference. A, because Deadpool is all disfigured underneath the mask, and because he also oftentimes gets mistaken for Spider-Man. Because the masks are kind of similar.
I still don't care what anyone says. We meet Ryan Reynolds with Tom Holland as Deadpool and Spider-Man. Imagine how hilarious that would be.
I mean, it would basically be Ryan Reynolds complaining that he can't swear and that the rating for this movie shouldn't have been PG-13. Yeah, I'm game for that.
But then the thing is, though, is that Tom Holland plays a Peter Parker with high anxiety, too. Imagine those type of personalities clashing.
Yeah, it would be really, I mean, hey, I'm not opposed to it. It would be funny as heck, especially because, like, in the comics, it's kind of hard to gauge which age which character is, but here the age difference between, like, Tom Holland and Ryan Reynolds, I think, would actually work in their favor, to the point where, like, I could totally see Deadpool going, oh, you little baby spider. But anyway, we can have an entire separate episode on all that speculation.
And then there's always Ryan Reynolds' favorite Wolverine.
I could just totally see, like, Deadpool's like, oh, okay, so which Spider-Man is this version? Have you and Wolverine switched bodies? Who's Wolverine? Oh, never mind. They haven't introduced him yet. Anyway.
So meta.
I don't know if the MCU can handle a meta character, but we'll see. So let's see. So funny thing to note is in the first scene where we see Peter changing into Spider-Man, he actually takes off his clothes. And then we see him in boxers. And then afterwards, when he goes to the party, he's actually wearing it underneath his clothes because Ned promised everybody Spider-Man would show up. You know, there's a few things missing from this movie that I think are key that we'll talk about as we get there. Let's see. So Peter and Ned go to the house party. Ned says it'll be a night to remember. Peter has anxiety issues. He really does. He just needs a hug. That poor baby needs a hug.
Well, why do you think Ryan Reynolds' Deadpool would be the perfect foil for Tom?
Yes. So they get to the party, Flash is the DJ, and Michelle is there. And for all of her, like, oh, I'm a loner, she's at this party. And the interaction with her is like, oh, why are you at this party? Am I, though? Like, it was pointless. It was completely unnecessary. It's her nothing. And I'm not the kind of person that thinks that, like, every scene in a movie needs to lead to something. But, and I'll talk a little bit more about this when we get through the film, is that just, like, her character is pointless. Okay. Peter feels kind of like, should I be doing this? And I had the urge to scream, with great power comes great responsibility. Flash is a jerk, of course. Peter puts on the suit, and then he sees an explosion of energy, and he goes for it. Bear in mind, of course, he's wearing the Stark suit. And I know that, like, Peter's OG suit was very, like, Ben Reilly-esque, but, like, I like the idea of Peter designing his own suit. Part of what was really sad but also really empowering about Peter Parker as a character is that he did have to do it all on his own. He had to make his suit by himself. He had to deal with the anxiety and grief and guilt of losing Uncle Ben and taking on this great responsibility of being Spider-Man by himself and dealing with the consequences of that. I feel like they almost made Peter come off a little bit too young. And I feel, first of all, Tony Stark is way too much for this movie, but we haven't gotten there yet. There's too much Tony Stark in this movie. So he sees the explosion, he goes after it, and this is where we see a guy selling weapons to another guy. We see an Ultron arm. He's like, yeah, this is straight from Sokovia. The character who is purchasing these weapons is Aaron Davis, who is played by Donald Glover. Funny story about
Glover.
Glover.
Get the Childish Gambino correctly, young lady.
Whatever. So Glover is interesting for two reasons. One, he is the voice of Miles Morales. Two, he plays Miles Morales's uncle in this, which is really interesting. And there's actually a reference to Miles Morales later on in the film, which only adds insult to injury, in my opinion, for some of these elements that they borrowed from his story. So there's like a little bit of a fight. Peter comes in, it's like, oh, why don't you pick on someone your own size or whatever? And it was very cute. Peter does some swinging. It's actually fun to see him swinging through different people's yards and everything. And it's also funny because we're so used to seeing Peter whip on skyscrapers, and there's no skyscrapers. It's like, you know, rich hipster neighborhood in Queens, suburban Queens. So then you see this like giant bird thing swoop down and just like pick Peter off like he was nothing, and he falls into the water. And Iron Man shows up and saves him from the water. Apparently the suit has an internal heating thing. And thank you so much, Tony Stark, for giving Peter a suit with no instructions.
Well.
There was no instruction manual.
But we'll get to that though. Because apparently there was.
Well, not really. Tony chastises Peter and also has, like, he doesn't have room to talk because he's actually in India somewhere. And Tony comes off like a giant hypocrite. Like, he really does. He's like, oh, call Happy if you find anything, if he sees a bad guy again, and, like, stay close to the ground. And it's just like Tony's trying to be Peter's dad, and Peter already had a dad. He had two, actually. One's name is Uncle Ben, which this movie refuses to mention. Like, when we said we didn't need to see the rehashing of Uncle Ben dying again, it didn't mean we didn't never wanted to hear the name Uncle Ben ever. Like, you could have a flashback of just Peter having a cookie with Uncle Ben. And, like, we know enough. We've seen all of these other movies and animated shows. We know the story. But, like, I'm going to go back to Spider-Man the Animated Series, because Spider-Man the Animated Series does not start with Uncle Ben dying. That is actually something that comes in a little bit later. And Peter talks about the first time he put on the suit and everything, because it ties into that story's episode. We can mention Uncle Ben. It's okay. I really hate the fact that Tony is taking on this parental role when A, nobody asked him to, and B, Peter doesn't need it. I'm sorry, he doesn't. Like, I don't care what Tony thinks and what kind of fantasy he's trying to live through vicariously and be pretend he can be a better dad to Peter because his own dad was not a great dad. Like, stop. So the party is basically over. Vulture's cranky, even though he's never called Vulture except by other characters. The losers return, and we actually have two Shockers, because I guess one decides to quit, and then so he gives the gauntlet to the other guys, like, okay, you're the Shocker now.
So what it was is that the first Shocker was the one who is really reckless,
right,
with the weapon trade sales and stuff like that, because he was told by Vulture,
no live
demonstrations, keep it quiet, we don't want the Avengers on it, or we don't want you know, the government or the Avengers.
Oh, it should also be noted that Peter tries to tell Tony about the weapons and, like, maybe you should call the Avengers, like, oh, this is below their pay grade. So everything that happens in this movie from this point forward is Tony Stark's fault. Fight me.
Well, we'll get to that when we get to a specific scene, because it does tie in eventually.
I know, but
But the thing is, though, is that so going back to Vulture and the Shocker guy. So Vulture's chewing him out. Shocker's like, you know what? The hell with this. I'm out of here. You can't. And then he goes, you know what? No, you can't afford to lose me. And Vulture's like, you know what? You're right. And he picks up a prototype gun that he thought was the anti-gravity gun. And he shoots the guy and he turns him to ash. Which does result in a funny little back and forth between him and his weapons maker, on that one.
Tinker.
Yeah, Tinker. That's what his name. With Tinker, and then you know
Tinkerer.
Yeah, but you know, so Vulture, he picks up the Shocker like gauntlet and hands it to the next guy, who then assumes the role of Shocker. So it was more Vulture going, "You are now the Shocker," type deal.
They did Shocker a little dirty. He was a lot of people's first Spider-Man like villain. I don't want to call him a villain. He's more of a lackey, but he's like a D-list burglar.
I don't like the guy who was started off as Shocker. I like the guy who finished the movie off as Shocker better.
I miss superhero costumes and supervillain costumes. I need that classic mask for the Shocker to believe it's the Shocker. Like, I need it. I'm a purist at heart in some ways.
Well, but my thing is that just take away the outfit, though. Between the two people who took on the role of Shocker, the second guy was a lot better than the first guy.
Get to see either one of them really do much. We see more of the second guy, so we don't really know what the first guy was about, other than that he's reckless. But part of the fun of the Shocker is that he's kind of full of himself and things like, this is the time he's going to best Spider-Man because he's the Shocker. But anyway.
Yeah.
So they're in. So Peter takes Tony's advice of staying close to the ground and finds a shard of this alien tech. And so they look at it in shop class and they think it's some kind of weapon. And the bad guys show up to the school. I guess they were tracking the shard piece. And there's an interesting comment that Peter's listening to when they say, like, oh, wow, what do you think the boss would say if he knew we were here? That's important for later. And so Peter uses it. He puts a tracker on the guys. And so they wait and they realize that the tracker takes them to Maryland. And
right outside of DC.
Right outside of DC. So how does Peter get to DC? By the power of plot convenience, the Scholastic Decathlon is in Washington, DC, which is only about 4-ish hours from New York. Depending on traffic.
And they took a bus.
And they took a school bus. Yeah. So Peter also like gets a call. So he gets back on the team. He also calls Happy and he finds out that Happy's tracking him, which is like a little unnerving. Like, come on. This is a little much, but okay. Peter, we see here that like Peter at the core of this is really frustratingly desperate to prove himself to Tony Stark, that he can be a real Avenger and that he's a competent superhero. And the thing of it is that when he's not trying, he is actually very competent. And that's one of the themes in this movie. But I understand why it is the way it is, because, you know, Tony Stark and he took him to Germany. But it feels so forced, in my opinion. But anyway, so they're at the hotel, and Peter, the Scholastic Decathlon is the next day, so Peter goes to...
Before that, Ned and Peter are in the hotel room. And
they're
looking at the suit.
The tracker.
And they find the tracking device. And then as Ned is actually playing, they actually hook up the suit to Ned's laptop.
So that Peter can remove the tracker.
Well, no. Well, yeah. So that they can locate where the tracker is and remove it. But then also Ned notices that he's been in training mode the entire time.
In training wheels protocol.
Yes. So technically speaking, there was an instruction manual.
No. That is not an instruction manual.
Hold on. Let me finish. Technically speaking, there was an instruction manual. Tony just didn't tell Peter how to access the instruction manual.
That's a cop-out. I'm sorry. That's a cop-out.
Oh.
That's not a... That's
it's
not
true, though.
No, it's not, though, because it's not a training manual. There is nothing that Peter could have accessed directly. Like, if Tony said, okay, this is the suit, this is how you access some of the functions of it, that would have been more than enough. But no, Ned had to physically go into the, like, HTML of the you know, the programming of the suit to find these training wheels protocols.
But also keep in mind, go back to the very beginning, though.
No.
Right? Yeah, no. Go back to the very beginning. Remember how Peter was doing the home videos of his journey to Germany? And he shows off, you know, he's dressed in the suit that he made. Happy comes in and goes, what the hell are you wearing? Where's the suit that we gave you? And then he opens up a door to another room that's also part of the hotel room that Peter didn't think was part of his room. And that's where he finds the suit. So from that point on to where we get to where we are now, he's never told about where he's at. He's never told that you're in training wheels protocol and that there's an instruction manual. So it's like, it's there. He just never knew.
I think it adds fuel to the fire because it kind of almost feels like Tony wanted Peter to fail just so he would be a normal kid instead of, you know, realizing what was going on. And it's very clear, even in Civil War, that Tony does not actually care. Because if he cared, he wouldn't have grabbed a random teenager and just shipped him off to Germany to get the shit beat out of him. And yes, I am saying that with fully acknowledging that Peter did put up a good fight. Like, yes, but still. Okay. So as we're getting to this, we're in DC. Apparently they're still digging rubble out of the Triskelion, you know, 3 years later,
a couple years later.
Because I think, it's been a couple years, 2-3 years, which makes sense. Tony really overdid it on the suit. Like, Ned removes the training wheels protocols because Peter's not a kid, even though he is a kid. And this is really, really oversaturated suit. There is way too much in this. And, like, some things are useful, like
webbings. It would be 3 years.
Yeah, so the different webbings are useful. I think the spider drone is useful, and like the enhanced hearing things, but there's a Karen, which I guess is only made so that Peter would have somebody to talk to. I think it's actually Friday, but it
didn't have a name at the time. Actually didn't have a name, and then Peter was like,
however, this is why I say however. The same voice for Karen is, I believe, the same voice for Friday in the Hulk, but in the Iron Suit, because it's voiced by Paul Bettany's wife. So I kind of want to call it Friday, but Peter gave it a name because Tony gave her an American accent.
So it's Jennifer Connelly who actually does the voice of it. And taking a look real quick, she is in Homecoming Only.
Really? Okay, so maybe I'm wrong. I thought she also did the voice for Age of Ultron.
I'll look that up for you for Friday.
So the Vulture is stealing tech. Peter follows.
But Jennifer Connelly is Paul Bettany's wife.
This is fact. Yes, that I knew. So the Vulture is basically robbing a truck. He ends up in this facility, and like I said, Tony really does overdo it with the suit. Peter ends up in the facility, and we really see Peter putting his smarts to use a little bit because he investigates. We see the Ultron helmet while he's stuck in this facility pretty much all night. And then of course he names Karen offers advice. because Peter needed somebody else to talk to. And so eventually he does get out after trying all of these different possible combinations. And Karen gets her name, and it's like a mini suit tutorial as well. Peter's late to the Scholastic Decathlon, and Midtown wins anyway. Peter's gone. So, and then afterwards, everybody's won. So they go to the Washington Monument. Fun fact, though, the Washington Monument was actually closed at the time of the filming and subsequently because of a couple of different things that had broken inside. So it was actually very funny. I used to tell students that I would take on tours that Spider-Man broke the Washington Monument. They believe me. But anyway.
So real quick, the voice of Friday is a woman by the name of Carrie Condon.
Oh.
And and she's been in all the films as Friday with Tony Stark.
Okay.
So, so Karen is Jennifer Connelly and Friday is Carrie Condon.
Gotcha. So anyway, they all go to the Washington Monument and they all go inside and go up, except Michelle, because she says that the Washington Monument was built by slaves and the park ranger, and the teacher kind of looks over at the park ranger like, is that true? And he's like, eh.
Well, no. The teacher was like, that's not true. And then he looks over at the park ranger and the park ranger is like, eh. and he was like, all right, fight on, you know?
I think it was at the beginning, but then because the Washington Monument was finished later on, it was, but it wasn't. But anyway, so she's the only one who does not go up, which again, makes me wonder why she's in this movie in the first place, but we find that out later. So Peter has no parachute in the suit, but his friends are in danger because the Washington Monument is actually a very unstable internal structure. So it breaks down literally all the time. But anyway, so they go into the elevator, and meanwhile, Peter's trying to call Ned because Karen had analyzed different shards and realized that this thing is an explosive and it can go off, which it does, and creates a giant mess inside and outside. So Peter's climbing up the Washington Monument, which is like, what, 5,000 feet, they say? Over 5,000 feet?
You want to know something funny? You want to know something really funny? I've been living down here in the D.C. metro area for over 30 years, since 1988. Guess how many times I've been inside the Washington Monument?
Zero!
Damn right.
Guess how many there's nothing. I don't understand what's so exciting about going inside the Washington Monument. So, I think you can get a much better view of D.C. from a lot of different places. And I think he's also lived in the D.C. area for a while.
I think what it is that, A, that's where the Statue of Washington is. It's up at the top, I believe. And two, yeah, the view that you can see looking outside the window.
There's a lot of statues of Washington. I feel like you've seen one, you've seen them all. No offense to George, but there's a lot of different statues of you, brah.
Sorry, anyway, George.
Sorry, George, old boy. So Peter's meanwhile trying to call Ned. They get in the elevator, there's an explosion, and everything kind of... So Peter's trying to climb up this freaking thing, and of course the police show up, because they're useful. Did I miss it? No, I think that happens when they come back. So the police show up, and of course they tell Peter to back off, and because they're so much better at handling this. Flash and the freaking trophy. Points to Flash for saving the trophy. He's not a completely pointless. Like, the kid has a brain. He's just a jerk.
No. See, saving the trophy is the biggest jerk thing that you can do, though.
That's true. No, I mean the fact that he was smart enough to make it onto this classic decathlon team in the first place, but he's a jerk because he tried to save the trophy. Anyway. Yeah. So anyway, Peter uses the help because she was trying to break the glass, but he couldn't. So he needed a bigger push of inertia to do it. So the helicopter ends up being perfectly placed for that. So he gets inside, he saves everyone. There's some really awesome webbing and how he does that. Flash, and then as Peter leaves, Flash is like, hey, do you really know Peter Parker? Toomes is meanwhile collecting more tech and he plans to kill Spider-Man. There's a moment where they're back in school and Peter's like, I don't have time for this. I'm going to be an Avenger. School's pointless, where he gets caught by the principal. The principal is a very important person because he's played by Kenneth Choi. Coincidentally, he is Principal Morita, who is the grandson of Jim Morita from Captain America, the first Avenger. who's one of the Howling Commandos. So Kenneth Choi basically got to play his own character's grandson, which is really funny. I think he's a great actor. I am enjoying him in 9-1-1 right now. But anyway, I thought it was funny because I like moments like that.
Oh, yeah. Like when that actually happened, I saw that. I was like, wait. And then, of course, you also see the picture in the background of his grandfather as with the Howling Commandos.
Yeah, when he's in the principal's office. Yeah.
Yeah. So you do see that in the background. You're like, cool.
So Peter ends up being in detention, and we have another Captain America PSA. Because so you got detention, you did something, and you know it was wrong, but you still did it. It's like those way back when in the olden days when they'd show like videos of like in Driver's Ed of like all of the people in car accidents. It feels like that. Except far less scary.
And more hilarious.
Seriously. So Michelle apparently doesn't have detention. She just likes to sketch people. That was a really important scene. So Karen runs facial recognition, and we learn that Aaron Davis, played by
Donald Glover.
And that's Prowler. I mentioned Miles Morales. Peter's not good at the interrogation parts of this. And Aaron kind of gives him some tips and pointers. And he's like, and then he ends up being helpful because Peter's very obviously a kid, but also because he says he has a nephew who lives in Queens. And this is very important because we are getting Miles Morales eventually.
Yep.
Which on the one hand makes me happy. On the other hand, given how Miles becomes Spider-Man in the Ultimate Comics, it makes it kind of sad because I don't want anything to happen to Petey.
Well, and also here's one of the interesting things, and this is something that, you know, we'll obviously talk more in depth when we get to Far From Home, is that there's now a legitimate possibility that we could see all three Spider-Men. Maguire, Garfield, and Holland.
In what universe is our
In either MCUs because of the whole multiverse thing, or in the Spider-Verse that Sony is trying to create.
That would be okay. So then you need all four Spider-Men.
Well, they haven't technically introduced Miles in live action.
Well, technically they already have. They just haven't explained it.
Yeah.
Because this is a very obviously Miles that Aaron is talking about. But anyway.
But the thing is that they haven't officially introduced the character. So maybe that's something that gets introduced a little later down the road. And, you know, but you got to see what happens in both the MCU and the Spider-Verse.
Anyway, so Peter is just like a little bit too incompetent. I understand he's supposed to be young and like typical teenagery, but maybe just because I'm watching it with my adult brain, that he's just felt a little bit too incompetent, like just a little bit. And like, it's very obvious that he's relying a lot on the suit and on Karen, which is like understandable from a teenage perspective, but very frustrating as a Peter, like a Spider-Man fan. Because part of the appeal, I said, of Spider-Man is that he goes at it alone and he doesn't have a lot of help and he kind of has to figure it out. And I wish we could have seen more of that figuring it out part. And like, we see it here, but it's done with a lot of help. He has Ned, he has Tony freaking Stark, he has Happy. And it's just, it doesn't quite feel as, in my opinion, a Spider-Man film should feel, but... So anyway, let's see. Where did we leave off? So let's see. So anyway, he goes to the Staten Island Ferry because that's where Aaron tells them they're going to be. And we see one of the minions or guys that work for Tombs is very obviously the Scorpion because how do we know this? Because he has a scorpion tattoo. After the Shocker, I think Scorpion was one of my first Spider-Man villains. And he's just so ridiculously, like, stupid at times that you kind of feel bad for him. And then 2 seconds later, he does something, and you're like, yeah, I don't feel bad for you anymore. Let's see. So, white pickup truck. Tony calls Peter to congratulate him on a job well done, which is, I guess, the Washington Monument Rescue. Let's see. Tony's like very daddy issues here. Like, it's very clear he's overcompensating and projecting his own daddy issues on Peter. Like, let's see. The FBI. So there's a little bit of a fight, and we learned that the FBI was on this boat. And then the Vulture comes out. Peter saves all the agents, but Vulture has this weapon, and as Peter pulls it out, it actually like goes haywire. And it actually cuts through the ship, which is the Staten Island Ferry, for those that don't know. So Peter does literally everything he can to hold the boat together. It's actually really impressive because he analyzes like what the most important pieces are and how to hold it together the best. And it's also very reminiscent of, I think, the original Sam Raimi Spider-Man film, where Spider-Man he's 2. Spider-Man 2? Yeah, when he's trying to hold the
train.
Yeah, so that was a nice nod, whether intentional or not. But
I think that might have been intentional.
I hope so. So then the Stark shows up, and he like reseals the boat. And
I love the one part where you got Spider-Man. He's trying to hold the ship together, and he thinks he's got it. And it, like you see that one guy's like, "Yeah, Spider-Man." And then of course Karen goes, "Oh, you got it 98%." And then of course everything starts falling apart. That's when Tony comes in. And then the same guy goes, "Yeah, Iron Man." Same guy.
This is like I wanted to punch Tony in the face in this movie. I think it's kind of obvious at this point, but basically he's been on Iron Man's radar, and Tony was the one who called the FBI, and like if you just told Peter this, because obviously Peter's the one that alerted you to this thing, you could have saved yourself the headache. But no, Tony Stark is the smartest person in the room. So he's mad at Peter. Peter tried to tell him about everything, and he's not interested. And Tony guilts Peter, and like, "Oh, what if somebody died? And what if you died? And that would have been my fault." I'm like, this is not your child. He is not your responsibility. Stop. And I say this as a longtime Spider-Man fan, going back to, I think, probably like 1996. So when I was 3 years old, watching the animated Spider-Man show in Russian dub. You're welcome from that bit of Sasha Kaplan history. It's annoying. But anyway, the end result is Peter's trying to impress Tony and be like Tony, and Tony takes the suit back, and Peter says he's nothing without the suit, which is very obviously not true. And
but he needs to learn that.
But he needs to learn. But then again, this is the part that is really frustrating, because realistically speaking, Peter already knows this because he was Spider-Man for 6 months before Tony Stark showed up at his apartment.
But and that's the thing, though. He lost that focus. Could you agree to that notion? He
definitely lost focus, because I think the problem wasn't the suit, though. The problem was Tony Stark. Because the entire time it's not, "Oh my gosh, the suit is amazing. I don't need to do anything. The suit will do it for me." It's, "I need to impress Tony Stark. I need to impress Tony Stark, the Stark internship."
But then it also becomes
that's the problem.
But then the suit does become a problem, though, because he learns about the training wheels protocol. He has it turned off. He has it. He's now trying to learn the suit on the fly. You know.
Yeah, which again goes to Tony and lack of direction. And like, if he cared as much as he claims to be, then you would have trained this kid with the whole training wheels protocols and everything. All of this. It bothers me that like Peter is. They're trying too hard to put this like father-son substitution thing for Tony and for Peter, and it's not necessary. It's really not. And this is why I think in some ways Far From Home actually works better, because there is significantly less Tony Stark in it. It's different take on it. And we'll get to that when we get to that. But anyway, so Peter takes the suit back. Tony takes the suit back, and Peter's like, "I have nothing without the suit." And he's like, "Well, I actually don't have any clothes under this." And Tony's like, "Oh, don't worry, we'll sort that out." So he takes the suit back, and Peter comes back home in like flip-flops, pajama pants, and a really ugly ass t-shirt. And May is obviously livid. She was scared. She freaks out. She's really concerned about Peter because, you know, she's his only family. She is his mom, essentially. So let's see. Peter tells her that he lost the Stark internship and he screwed it up. Peter's sorry, he made May worry. And Peter then meets with the principal and gets a lot of detention. And for a while, he becomes a regular kid. He bonds with Liz. And there's an interesting point that I think, let's see. There was an interesting point that I think is very telling. There's a moment when they're in, like, social studies class, and they're talking about the Sokovia Accords. And if you notice, the Sokovia Accords are not mentioned by Tony or Happy, and they don't play a role in this film other than as a tidbit of history, which makes me which brings back the validity of my point from Civil War that the Sokovia Accords are pointless and were not legally binding. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I have been vindicated. So either the Accords were magically canceled after Civil War, which obviously they weren't because they play a part later. Because they mentioned that Steve is a fugitive, then either that or it just never got ratified by Congress. So I'm doing a little happy dance because I'm right. Okay. Anyway, so Peter becomes a regular kid for a while. He finally gets the chutzpah to ask Liz out. And she is his date for homecoming. And it's actually really cute Peter going to May and like, May, I need a suit. And she shows him how to dance and helps him tie his tie. And it's so cute. I think a mention of Uncle Ben could have been great at this moment. And there is a point, I think, where her and Peter go to lunch. And I love the fact that the MCU keeps playing on this trope that Peter's aunt is really attractive. Because Tony hit on her. The waiter at the restaurant hit on her. The sandwich guy. Like, everybody's hitting on a man. Like, I get it. But even when they're talking at the restaurant and they're talking about, like, oh, these last few months have been hard on you. Like, just a casual mention of Uncle Ben would have been perfectly okay. You didn't have to completely erase his existence. Anyway, so the date comes, Peter takes Liz to, he comes to take, pick Liz up, and he opens the door, and guess who?
It's Adrian Toomes.
It's the Vulture. This is an interesting twist that I will admit, I fully saw it coming.
But one of the interesting things, though, is that the moment that he opens the door, Adrian Toomes opens that door, you have that sense that they both know who each other is.
Actually, you don't. I think that's just how... I think Peter obviously knows because he'd seen him. But I don't... But Toomes doesn't put two and two together until they're in the car. And he starts talking and Liz tells him about the Stark internship. And Spider-Man. And that's when he puts it together. But you do, they're hinting at it.
Yeah.
So Peter's basically like, what he has this like blank face the entire time. And then they're in the car. So Liz and Peter are like in the back of a Bentley or something. And they're being taken to the dance. And Toomes is trying to get to know Peter. He's like, have we met before? Your voice sounds really familiar. And Liz is like, no, Dad, you've never met. And he asks, like, oh, Peter, what are your plans after school? Because you go to to this Midtown Science, which is a very fancy schmancy sciencey school, and like your future set. And Peter's like, I have no idea what I'm gonna do. And Liz mentions the Stark internship. Mm. And she also mentioned that he like hangs out with Spider-Man. And that's where he puts two and two together. And by this conversation, he figures out that Peter's Spider-Man. So as they get to the dance, Liz leaves and she's like, love you, Daddy, please don't scare Peter. And he's like, you know, we're going to have a man-to-man talk. And Toomes threatens to kill everybody that Peter knows and loves.
But we'll let it slide as long as his daughter has a good time at the dance. Because he pretty much went, you saved my daughter's life. And it's like, it's a life for a life on this one.
It's also not that. He also basically tells him just, like, leave it alone, and, like, because he mentions that he's going out of town earlier. So it's like, if you leave this alone and, like, show my daughter a good time, we'll forget this ever happened. So Peter obviously gets to the dance, and he sees Ned and everything, and he just, like, he cannot leave well enough alone. So obviously he puts on his old costume, and he leaves the dance, and then he gets smacked around by the Shocker.
Well, first off, before even that happens, he tells Ned, hey, you know, and this is Ned's thing, he gets to be the guy behind the guy in the chair.
No,
he says, hey, I need to be the guy in the chair, because the thing is,
go to the computer lab, call Happy.
Yeah, call Happy, but not only that, but track his phone, because he left his phone in Vulture's car.
Yep.
And then he jacked Flash's car.
No, I haven't gotten there yet. That hasn't happened yet. Hold on. I was getting to all of this. So Peter gets flung around by the Shocker, and then somebody webs the Shocker before he can, like, hurt Peter, and that was Ned. This is the only time he's actually useful. This like, next sequence. From here, Ned needs to be the guy in the chair, and Peter goes after Toomes. And he says, oh, he's going out of town, and so Ned has to track the phone, and then Peter steals Flash's car when he can't drive, which was really funny. And he's like, oh, I need your car. And he's like, no, this is my dad's car. And Peter takes it anyway. So then he has to figure out how to drive it. And he realizes that it's moving day. This is something that's been happening kind of in and out. Whenever Happy's on screen, we see he's like helping pack stuff up, stuff that's being moved. Things are being moved to the compound. Things like the, the prototype Hulkbuster armor and the prototype for Steve's shield and Thor's utility belt or whatever. So Peter's on his way, and he sees basically the plane takes off, or no, he arrives to Toomes' facility, and he's basically like lamenting about the problems and how the rich are evil and nobody cares about the little guy, and Tony Stark is a jerk, which we already know. Then the armor, the wings activate because he's distracting Peter. And Peter's like, oh, you can't even hit me. And this is really important, because what he's actually doing is the pillars are being broken and the whole building ends up crashing on Peter. And this is where we get one of the best scenes in the comic or in the film, is the scene of Peter struggling. And this poor baby needs a hug. And he's really struggling, but he pulls himself up. And that is like, it's straight from the comics, and it's just such an amazing scene of him seeing half him, you know, Spider-Man mask, and then he just like lifts it all up from that iconic scene from the comics. And oh, thank you, Steve Ditko, for giving us that. It is just beautiful. So Peter goes after Toomes, and he manages to like latch on to his wing and ride it as he gets to the airplane. Toomes goes inside the airplane, and he sees all of the different gadgets. There's Chitauri weapons. There's a whole bunch of other stuff that we can see, like the Iron Man helmet. There's a suit in the back. There's a whole bunch of gadgetry inside that airplane. Long story short, they fight. The plane crashes. Let's see. Vulture's wings are meanwhile getting more and more damaged. Happy finally notices something's wrong, and the plane crashes on Coney Island Beach. And let's see, there's ringing in Peter's ear. Vulture attacks Peter. He keeps calling Peter Pedro, which I know that's like the equivalent of Peter in Spanish, but it was kind of an odd thing to. It's a little odd.
I think that was maybe Vulture's way of not giving away his identity, Parker's identity away.
Oh, yeah, that could have been it.
Because, I mean, and we'll get to it in a moment, but, you know, there is a part, or actually we're going to get to the part where with the wings actually explode and Parker saves Vulture. Which that also plays in an after credit scene coming up.
So yeah, just like Michael said, Peter saves. So he tries to warn him that like your suit, that they're gonna explode. They do explode. He saves Tombs, and then by the time Happy arrives, Peter's gone. He's sitting on the the cyclone, and he's watching this. And there's a note that says, "I found the vulture," from your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man, something like that. And that's
suck it, Peter, right? Suck there. It, Happy, suck it.
Oh, it says found flying vulture from your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. And so this is really interesting. So as we see in the school, we actually see a couple of Hasidic boys in the background, which I did not notice the first time. Like, yes, confirmation, the Jews actually exist in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Thank you. I mean, statistically speaking, obviously, I know they exist, but still, I'm not getting a Jewish superhero anytime soon, so this is what I have to deal with. So Peter is seen with Liz. Liz is leaving the school because, her dad got arrested. She's moving to Oregon because apparently it's nice there. The decathlon team picks Michelle as the new captain, and she says, "Oh, just call me MJ. All my friends do." And he's like, "I thought she didn't have any friends." Or Ned says that. And then Peter gets a text, and it's Happy in the bathroom, which is like totally not creepy. So Happy says he owes Peter because this is his job and blah, 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 blah. I really think he should have apologized to Peter, but that's a separate story.
Well, the funnier thing is that he's about to say something to Peter, and then a kid comes out of the stall and just washes his hands, and Happy's just looking at him going like, "Really?
How long have you been here? Long enough for it to be creepy." Anyway, so he takes Peter to the compound, and Tony's like, "Oh my gosh, I can't believe you proved yourself, blah, 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 blah. I got you a new suit. Let's go to this press conference thing, and we'll announce you as the new member of the Avengers." And Peter's like, "You know what? I really don't need this, actually. I think I'd rather go back to being a friendly neighborhood Spider-Man." And as he's leaving, Peter's like, "Is this a test?" And Tony's like, "Yep, this was a test. Congrats, you passed." Except it really wasn't. And there's an actual press conference, and Pepper comes out, and I guess her and Tony are back together and about to get engaged, and I do not care. But Peter goes back to the car, and basically that's that. Let's see.
And you got two end credit scenes.
Hold on. So Peter does actually get a spider suit that is given to him afterwards. That's the same new suit that we see Tony showing off. So the movie.
Well, actually, the one that he's showing off, I think, is the one that eventually comes to him in Infinity War.
That is the one in Infinity War.
Yeah, because he gets the original suit that was given to him back.
That's it.
Yeah, the one he was given in Civil War, he gets back because he wears it in one of the end credit scenes.
Yeah. Anyway, so Peter puts on the suit that he just got back or got whatever, and as he's admiring himself in the mirror, you see Aunt May in the back, and the last words in this movie are "What the?" And so the after credit scene is Tombs in prison, and he meets up with Scorpion, whose name is totally not real name is totally irrelevant, but he's like, "Hey." Rumor has it, this guy's secret identity. And he's like, "If I did, I would have killed him," which is very interesting. So I think at the end of it, Tubes was kind of an opportunist, but I don't think he's not the worst evil diabolical villain. He's kind of poor man's Tony Stark in a way.
I think two things also play in the factor in this one. Is that A, somebody else wants to kill the kid.
Yep.
But Tombs doesn't want him to die.
Unless
he's really the one to do it. But he also thinks to himself, it's like, maybe killing this kid is the wrong idea anyways, because A, he saved his daughter, and two, saved his life.
This is also a good point.
So, in a way, I think Tombs, may or may not, we don't know if he ever comes back. There have been talks that he will come back at some point.
We don't know.
That he could at some point maybe be part ally, part enemy.
At this point, you can set up, so this movie does a good job of like Loki setting up some of Peter's like C-list rogues gallery, which is, you know, the Shocker, Scorpion, you have the Vulture now.
Harry Osborn is not actually mentioned at all.
At all. You even have the Prowler Loki with Aaron Davis, but so there's a lot that is happening here. So I thought, I promise we'll get to the last after credits scene, I think at the end once we're through everything, but it's not really much of an after credit scene, but it exists. And when I saw it coming, and as soon as like it opened up, I started laughing hysterically for the entire theater to hear me. But let's talk about MJ. Can somebody tell me what her point of is in this movie, other than to ruin everything? Look, this is not Zendaya's fault. I think casting her would have been perfectly fine if they let her, gave her something to do.
I think the whole point, like you just said, personality. I think that was the point, to set a different type of personality for the MJ character.
Except MJ,
because, but not only that, but also the other thing is that she becomes a focus. She is a focus, a major focus. Come Far From Home.
True, but this movie, in my opinion, did not do a good enough job of making me give a flying hoot about her. Because I don't. She was boring. She was pointless for 99.99% of this movie, and nothing about her was explained. And, like, yes, you could argue that, like, that wasn't the point of the movie, blah, 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 but, like, you could cut Tony Stark out of this movie and give me a little bit more personality for Michelle, and I would have been fine with it. There's a lot of different things you could do with Mary Jane. In the ultimate Marvel, you know, universe, Mary Jane goes through a lot of trials and tribulations, and she has the personality. In this version, in the Ultimate Comics, she's more of a journalist. She likes to investigate. She's basically April O'Neil. But honestly,
version of April O'Neil?
Like animated TMNT kind of April O'Neil, in my opinion, but less damsel in distress. But Michelle doesn't do a lot for this movie. I feel like if you wanted to do a different take on, you know, Mary Jane, there's so much you could pull through, because, you know, the last version of Mary Jane was so amazing. What could we possibly do to top that? I'm sorry, Kirsten Dunst, and it's not her fault. I don't think Mary Jane was written very well in the Sam Raimi films either. And it has I know there was a lot of backlash because they cast a black actress to play, or an African-American actress to play Mary Jane. I don't care about that. I care about the fact that the character is a waste of space. And that's insulting, I think, to the character and to the actress playing the character. Because you could cut all of Michelle's scenes and they would change absolutely nothing about this film. It is completely unnecessary. And while I think she was a lot better in the second film, it still felt like there was something missing for me. And maybe that's something that I'll continue to develop, but I feel like it's a bit of a missed opportunity to do something really different with Mary Jane, because we largely haven't seen that many live action versions of Mary Jane. She wasn't even in the Amazing Spider-Man film, even though I think Shailene Woodley filmed those scenes, but then they ended up getting cut from, I think, Amazing Spider-Man 2, which, like, there's nothing worthwhile in Amazing Spider-Man 2, so, like, it doesn't matter anyway, but that's one. Ned is useful in the end, but is so annoyingly frustrating that you don't even care, although that funny moment... So let's not forget that he tried to call Happy. Happy hung up on him. And then the teacher comes and he's like, oh, what are you doing here? The dance is, you know, back there. And he's like, oh, I'm watching.
Looking porn.
Porn, okay. But as a character, he was very annoying. The fact that he was like, oh, should we tell people you're Spider-Man? I should tell people you're Spider-Man. It's like, no, you should do neither one of those things. I definitely think it's unfair that they borrowed him from Miles Morales's lore. I think that there is enough side characters in the Spider Spider-Man, you know, 50 plus years of history that you could have pulled from anybody else. I think it would have been much more interesting to see a non-romantic female friendship for Peter. So that would have been interesting. Every time I see the scenes with Tony Stark, I'm frustrated, and I've been kind of going, mentioning this as we've been going through this review, because it almost felt like it was trying to very slightly hijack parts of Peter's story. And I've said this again, I'll say this again, and I'm looking at some of my Spider-Man comics right now, is that Peter is such an amazing character. And because, like Captain America, like Iron Man, he has such a long history, there is so much you could pull from. There is so much you can adapt. And there's a lot of elements of the original, of the Ultimate Spider-Man, you could have adapted without compromising Peter's character. And I think him trying to appeal to Tony and get Tony's attention just felt a little bit forced in the story. That being said, I think Tom Holland is a perfect choice to play Peter Parker. He is definitely the kind of person I pictured playing Peter Parker. He does an amazing job. He is so natural, even though he's British, at playing Peter. He does a really great
job. That's because that's essentially like his personality. I mean, look at what they had. Well, look at the great lengths they had to go with Tom Holland for filming not just Infinity War, not just Endgame, but also Far From Home. They had to literally put him on lockdown. They had to give him minor parts of scripts. They had to put people like Benedict Cumberbatch with him for his like talk show interviews and stuff like that, because they needed somebody. Because like that's kind of like, you know, Tom Holland was essentially like that Peter Parker.
Yeah, that's fair. I think Peter can keep a secret slightly better than Tom Holland, but
that's also true.
But with that in mind, I guess it feel like I get they were trying to make this a coming of age story when I don't think that's what Peter necessarily needed. I think it would have been much more interesting, at least for maybe the first 25 quarter of the movie, was actually seeing Peter do this by himself and seeing that that doesn't work. And maybe that's borrowing maybe a little bit from Amazing Spider-Man. At this point, I haven't rewatched those films in years. So,
to be honest, but I haven't seen the Tobey Maguire Spider-Mans in years. I've never seen the Amazing Spider-Man films with Andrew Garfield.
I mean, we could do a separate episode. I think there's a lot of good things. The first one is okay, and I like the fact that they... I will talk about Spider-Man lore till I am blue in the face. So this is like asking me to talk about Jewish superheroes. One of my favorite characters, favorite villains, even though I use that term loosely, from the original Spider-Man animated series, or not the original Spider-Man animated series, I should say the 90s animated series, was the Lizard. Because it was, I think it handled that Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde aspect in some ways better than the Hulk does. And so I was slightly disappointed with how they handled the Lizard in Amazing Spider-Man, but we could do a separate episode just about that.
We probably will at some point.
So sticking to the after credit scene of the final after credit scene, it's like, okay, so imagine, for those that have not seen this movie and we thoroughly spoiled it for you, imagine you're in the theater. The credits are rolling and you're thinking, are they going to hint at Thor Ragnarok? Is this going to be a tease for another Marvel movie? What is going to happen? And you're sitting there for a good, you know, 5-10 minutes, however the credits are rolling, and the credits are over, and the screen is white, and it's Captain America telling you that patience is a virtue. And sometimes you might be disappointed. And sometimes life might throw you curveballs. And like, you can just see it. Steve's face, and then he turns to the camera guy and he's like, how many more of these do I have to do? And first of all, who I love the idea Steve was like forced to record these as part of like, I don't know, something that happened between Avengers and Captain America, the Winter Soldier, but it's so funny and it works. And it's kind of like a disappointing after credit scene for obvious reasons, because it does nothing other than make you laugh, which I think is fine. It's kind of like it's a fake out. So I will say that it's still a thoroughly enjoyable film. I think that if you're not familiar with Spider-Man, you are more likely to enjoy it than those that are more thoroughly, you know, familiar with Spider-Man as I'm like 25 years into reading Spider-Man. And so that is what I have to say. So Michael, can you tell us, how did Spider-Man do?
Well, before I do that, there's a bone I need to pick with Sony real quick.
Go for it.
Sony, as a physical media collector who buys all the Blu-rays and then eventually downloads the digitals at a later time, please, when the movie is over, don't have it go right into all the special features right off the bat. That's why there's a special features menu. I don't want to just skip through everything just so I can get back to the menu. Because obviously, with Blu-ray, it automatically gives you the resume play feature. Well, if I do resume play and I haven't played any of the special features, that is immediately after the movie's over, then it's just going to take me back there and not take me back to the menu so I can just watch the film. Yeah, so Sony, you're the only company who does this. There's a reason nobody else does it. It's stupid. Stop it. Stop it. I'm going to smack you. Stop it. Okay, now with that said, Spider-Man Homecoming clocks in at 2 hours and 13 minutes with a 7.4 out of 10 on IMDb.
And how does that rank with some of the other films that we have had some interesting opinions with?
Well, it's 0.2 below Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
Fair.
0.1 below Doctor Strange.
Fair.
0.1 above Age of Ultron.
I don't know. I feel like that's semi-fair, even though I think I enjoyed Age of Ultron a little bit more, having to rewatch it, than Spider-Man Homecoming.
0.1 above Ant-Man.
What? Nope. I'm sorry. Ant-Man is better than this movie. I'm sorry.
0.2 better than Iron Man 3.
Yeah, that's fair. I definitely rank this higher than Iron Man 3. But with that,
where can the people find you on the social medias?
Always geekgirl101.tumblr.com. I love hearing people's random things about changes to the MCU. The most recent one was, how will MCU react when it is revealed that, Captain Marvel is a title that has been held by like five other people that is, they're not Carol Danvers. So always love those musings. And of course, Geeky Captain on Instagram.
All right. And then as always, you can find me on the Twitter at the Lindenbaum 75, Facebook at facebook.com/X75Productions. And of course, everything for me is also at txhthockey.com. And for the show /Nerdy-Notions.
So with that, we're going to stick around New York for just a little bit, but we are actually blasting back to Asgard if Heimdall ever opens the Bifrost again as we get into Thor Ragnarok.